and Norm Shealy. You are listening to Infinite Consciousness, your infinite access to the world
of the mind.
Hi, this is Eva Herr. Thanks for being with us tonight. And thanks for taking the time out of your schedule to be with us. Tonight I have with us Dr. Stephen Smith. And we're having a bit of a bad connection. Can you hear me, Dr. Smith?
I can hear you just fine. Can you hear me?
We have a really bad connection, static kind of thing. Oh, he's typing. Okay.
No, I'm not typing.
No?
No, I'm actually sitting out in my shop. Maybe I can take them.
That's funny.
Out in the open here.
We're having Dr. Stephen Smith and Dr.
Is this
Smith
better?
Yes, that's good. That's good.
Okay.
Thank you.
So we're going to have
We're live on the air. We're having Dr. Stephen Smith, and we're going to talk about mostly about his work with MTHFR, or methyl tetrahydrofolate reductase, genetic deficiency. So welcome, Dr. Smith, and thank you for taking the time to come on my show. Before we get started, would you just tell us a little bit about you and where people can find you and what it is that you do and a little bit about your credentials?
Well, I think I got in this pathway the way most people do is I got sick. When I left training, I was just did a regular internship and I was going to do OBGYN, and I loved it, but I noticed my attendings weren't having as much fun as I was, so I went into urgent care and I developed 3 centers in 3 states in about 12 months. Had trouble getting the doctor at one, so I worked 30 14-hour shifts, seeing 100 patients a day, and crashed hard. Depressed, couldn't hardly work, hurt all over. I was a mess. And I didn't know what to do. And I knew from the training, I talked to my colleague, they really didn't know what to do either. They could give you antidepressants. But I sort of came out of this, and then I started going down my worst problem, which was allergy. So I went to allergy seminars, regular allergy centers, and then I went to ENT allergy, and I went to environmental medicine. One of the guys that went to ENT said, yeah, come over here. So they had a training course. And I took that training course, and as part of that, we did some IV nutrition. And one of the first things you learn is how to mix a Myers cocktail, which is a sort of an energy cocktail. Mm-hmm. We gave it to each other. Woke up at 3 a.m. with so much energy, I didn't know what to do with myself, and that lasted for a month.
Before we go on, and just briefly, because I know you have a lot to say, why don't you just tell folks what is a Myers cocktail so they know?
It's a combination of magnesium, calcium, vitamin C, B-complex, mostly just minerals and vitamins, and lots of magnesium, B12, named after Dr. Myers, of course. It's probably one of the most common IVs that are given for people who are fatigued or have fibromyalgia. So anyway, that changed my course of medicine because when I went to the lectures, I could hardly sit still, but partly because I was so ADD, but partly because I was so excited. I was hearing about this cycle. We're having to learn biochemistry again. We learn biochemistry in medical school, then we promptly forget it as soon as we get the pharmaceutical stuff going, you know. But turns out this stuff's important. And so I would sit in that classroom and say, oh, that's so-and-so I saw last week. That's the problem there. And oops, there was an airplane going overhead. And that's so-and-so. So it led me on this road to, you know, delve more into integrative medicine. And so what I would do is go find if I found somebody that was good, I would go take his course. And I would always volunteer to be the guinea pig if they wanted to do anything on me. So I would get treated at the same time. So I just sort of learned it piece by trying to find the best doctors that I knew in each specific area and go listen to them. Because all of this was not what we're being taught locally in our local CME. In fact, I just read an interesting article the other day. It says our practice of medicine on average is 17 years behind the actual medical science. And from my experience, that's true. So I learned chelation, and I had this combination clinic of urgent care, and then I had my allergy and environmental medicine clinic. So that's sort of how I got into it, and gradually I used the same treatments on myself. I've had probably 30 chelation therapies and had my amalgams out. That was a huge thing for me, because my mouth was just full of mercury, and I have the MTH of bar 677 and 1298, and we don't tolerate mercury. So when I did that, I got my brain back.
I'm curious. I'm actually doing that right now. In fact, I had a really bad a root canal that went off that I had to redo, and it was really infected. It made my C-reactive protein go up to 13, and now that I've had it fixed, it's down to 1, so I know that's, you know, connected. But how do you feel now that you've had yours? I've got one side out, and I've got one more side. What can I expect to feel the difference? Because there are a lot of folks out there like me doing that.
Well, the first thing, I didn't use a dentist that's trained in mercury-safe dentistry.
Okay.
And so I told him to use a dam and all that stuff, but I didn't use binding agents during the procedure, and I didn't give myself glutathione because I didn't know this at the time. This was over probably 25 years ago. And I got sicker than a dog. I thought this was the biggest mistake I could ever make, because it was worse. And then about 30 days, I started taking stuff, and then about 30 days, I started to get my brain back, and then it was starting going up. And
what'd
then,
you take?
I don't remember, but I can tell you once I did DNPS, which is a oral IV chelating agent, I could actually feel my brain brighten within hours.
Really?
Yes, it was amazing. The other process that's done this has been lymphatic massage, where they've taken and moved the lymph out of the brain. And I see this not uncommonly, where people get the lymphatic congestion. And if you can get that lymph flowing in their brain, and so they can actually drain the toxins, then they'll see an almost immediate improvement in their brain function.
That's really wonderful to know. And so, tell me what things did you target? Because a lot of people have this MTHFR. They may not know which allele, but what are some specific symptoms? Are they feeling then terrible? Can you give them some specific things that they should look for that they might feel? And I'll give you for an example that I'm talking about. I started getting I got a Morton's neuroma a long time ago. Now that I've started doing, I do injections, B12, the Morton's neuroma went away. So now, instead of doing once a month, I can tell that when I do it a quarter of a dosage every week instead of one shot once a month, I can tell when I start needing it again, I'll start getting that Morton's neuroma feeling thing. So do you have any specific symptoms you can help people to know what they can look for?
Well, I noticed, I'm going to tell my wife, because she's got a double 1298, and when she needs a shot, my behavior deteriorates markedly, and when she gets a shot, my behavior gets much better. But for me, I get a little spacey if I haven't had my Deflin. I tend to forget things, but you can have migraines. All the diseases are linked to this: cancer, Alzheimer's, diabetes, migraines, Parkinson's.
Now,
and
what
that
is
stroke...
Deplin, so they know? Because we mentioned B12. What, tell them what Deplin is, because they may not know that.
Oh, okay. Deplin is a form of L-methylfolate. It's a concentrated form. It's a medical food.
I don't like it.
I don't like it because it's got all kinds of junk in it as far as the capsule goes. We complained about it, so they took it out of the tablet, and then they put all kinds of it in the capsule, and it's still got all the junk in it. So, but it's convenient for me.
Yeah. So, I would like to talk about some things, because we've had several people on about MTHFR, and I'd like to ask you some specific questions, if you don't mind. People like is that all right with you?
Sure.
Okay. For example, myself, I absolutely cannot take any kind of oral form of B12, none. The methylated cobalamine, the hydroxy, the adeno, it doesn't make any difference. I can't take it. I feel like I'm plugged into an electrical socket. So I found that the injectables work for me, but since that time, I've also found out that if I don't have good zinc levels and I don't have good lithium levels, I'm not going to be able to use B12 properly. And I don't think I've ever had anybody talk about that. Or do you know about that?
Yeah, one of the first things I like to see is a mineral level, and especially with some of the other anomalies that you often see with this, like CBS. There can be a profound mineral deficiency, and typically the answer we get is none is found, like molybdenum for sure. The other day we had a lady in chromium, none. Selenium, just a little bit. Manganese was gone. So all of these pathways need minerals. And if you don't have them, then the pathway can't function. And so I will often explain that we live in the Columbia River, and we have a massive dam called Grand Coulee. If you were to blow Grand Coulee, all that water would hit those other dams, and you would have floods at each one of those dams. And that's somewhat what can happen, is you get a flood of metabolites at wherever your weak block is. So the first thing you want to do, really, before you even start your methylation, is work on the mineralization and decreasing the load. See, it's sort of an equation. You have load, which is the things that bother you. Your gut is a huge one. It's the size of a tennis court. And if it's inflamed, that's a lot of inflammation that your body has to take care of. The mercury in your mouth, the stuff you put in your mouth from your food that's got pesticides on it. All of these are things that your body has to deal with. And a lot of this is under your control. You can change your cleaning agents. You can quit putting in artificial scents in your home. Sometimes people have problems with carpet, or they'll pick a carpet in a new home that's off-gassing all kinds of stuff, and they'll get sick from that. These are all things that you can do. So the basic place to start is with your habits, what you're eating, and what you're using, and your environment. You have a fair amount of control over that. Then work on the minerals, build the foundation before you start stressing this. Because when you start upregulating methylation, if you haven't detoxified for 20 years, you're going to detoxify. And that's not always pretty, because sometimes those toxins come out very, very quickly, and they don't get all the way out. And so you get more symptoms, which is what you're describing, when you try to detoxify some of these things.
So most people, now that they're hearing about MTHFR, and all they hear about many tests for folate or folic acid, even now I think it's saying folate. So people run out and take B12 supplements and or folic acid supplements, maybe even individually.
Well, that can actually be a big mistake. In fact, the FDA is trying to make it so you can only have folic acid in your supplement. But unmetabolized folic acid decreases natural killer cells. So if you wanted to increase cancer in the population, a good way to do that would be to insist on only folic acid being used in the supplements, because if your body can't metabolize it, it'll decrease your ability to fight off cancer through this, downregulating natural killer cells. Not a very good thing to do.
So we're talking about, we must include in that understanding breads and pastas and things that are supplemented, but, right? And by the way, I just want to say we're not attempting to treat or diagnose anyone. Even though Dr. Smith is a physician, we're just providing information.
Well, you know, one of the things I when I talk about this is I ask people, what does a high B12 level mean in a person with a methylation problem? And the answer doesn't mean anything because they can't process it. Same thing, they'll have you check their folic acid level. It'll be high, actually. That's a danger signal because you're not processing that folic acid. You're not using it, so it becomes toxic by damaging your natural killer cells. So it's important to understand the difference between folic acid, which is not a natural product, and the L-methylfolate, which is a natural product that your body manufactures, and that's active. So you really have to have active folic acid, L-methylfolate.
So if someone runs out, if somebody has an MTHFR mutation, and they run out and they take some 5-MTHF or some active methylfolate, what's going to happen?
Well,
and I guess where I'm wanting you to take them is, you must do this under a doctor's supervision, because if you take too much, you can almost kill yourself with the detoxing. Ask me how I know.
Yeah, so we've all been there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
well,
you
first
talk
of all,
to them about safety there.
First of all, you need to know that all 5-MTHF folate is not the same. So it's only the L form that's active. And we know this in pharmaceuticals, too, that if you want to reduce the reactivity to a drug, you get rid of the LR isomer, which causes most of the side effects, and the L one's where you get most of the benefits. So a lot of these products out there are what are called racemic. That means they have both the L form, the inactive, and the L form that's active. So you only want the L form. Now, the most you're going to be able to find in the L form is 1 milligram. If that's metafolin, and it's manufactured by Merck, actually, and that's all they allow. There are other forms of folate that you can get. The 6S form is active, and the quadrifolic is active. But just, there's a lot of that's out there that's racemic, and you're seeing it in 5, 10, 15 milligrams. But what you're not realizing is a lot of that's inactive and actually blocking the active form.
So out of all the folates that you could take to best help the patient with an MTHFR mutation, what is the single best one, regardless, what would you want somebody to take out of all
L-methylfolate.
In what form?
Usually it's just a pill.
Okay.
Readily, it works pretty well.
So not those calcium folinate injections or any of those things?
If it's a pharmaceutical, it starts with F, avoid it.
Okay.
It's just a general rule. There's a bunch of them out there that aren't very good. The ones from the pharmaceutical industry that are medical foods, they're not pharmaceuticals, are Metnex and L-methylfolate in the form of Deflin. But those have problems in that their capsules are full of contaminants. So if you need high doses, that's an option.
So is it? Will you get the same detox effects if you use L-methylfolate, the 5-MTHF?
5-MTHF typically means that's a racemic, because
okay.
There's not an L. The reason the L is not there because it isn't there. It's racemic.
Okay,
so you want to look for L-methylfolate.
So if you take that one, will you get as bad of a detox?
Okay, well, everybody's different, and everybody has other problems and pathways, too. So, for example, they can have MTR and MTRR blocks, which are next to them, so you sort of have to grease the whole thing a little bit. So I like to start people off with minerals and then, you know, get the junk out of their diet. These are things that don't cause reactions. And then I like to check to make sure they don't have a lot of lymphatic congestion. If you've got lymphedema or, you know, swelling in the legs or any joints, like with complex regional pain syndrome, you've got to get that under control. If you try to detox that person, you'll get the toxins out of the cell and then around the tissue where they will do a lot of harm. So my rule is your drainage has to exceed your detoxification. So if you've got a lot of lymphedema, you've got to work on that first before you can start detoxing.
Tell me what you were just talking about, the joints. No one else has talked about that before.
The what?
You were talking about the problems in the joints. I've not heard none of the other people I've interviewed talked about a problem that happens with joints or edema.
Oh, I wasn't talking about joints. I was talking about soft tissue. For example, there's lots of people out there that suffer from a terrible disorder called complex regional pain syndrome. General medicine thinks it's, you know, it's unsolvable. They don't know what causes it. We treated a couple of cases just recently, and they were actually fairly easy to correct. These people will have longstanding pain for 5, 6, 7, 10 years after a simple injury. And the common finding is lymphedema, which is there'll be a little swelling in that. And then they get a symptom called allodynia, which just means that if I, like, touch your skin, that wouldn't normally hurt. But a person with these disorders, there's a great deal of pain from just a light touch.
Interesting.
So and it's because all those toxins are trapped right around that area, and there's a constant inflammation in the area.
Okay.
So you detox those people, you'll make them even worse. So you got to get them back. I use homeopathics, and I found the homeopathics work very well for lymphatic problems.
And
there's several products out there that, you know, they'll say lymph homeopathic, and I found that all of them seem to work. They're usually liquids, and you just put a drop in. But they are, on someone who's really toxic, they're just like dynamite. You really have to be careful. Just start with the slightest little drop and then have a sip of that in water, and then start increasing the dosage as tolerated. And with all of this stuff, with detoxification, the main rule is to go slowly.
So instead of me continuing to ask you just disjointed questions, do you have a place you like to start? And I'll let you do that without interrupting you. Like go through your protocol, maybe? Or do you want me to keep asking just rent?
No, you can ask me questions. I think that works best for me. So.
It just interests me so much. So the lithium thing really interests me so much. How does lithium help hold on to B12? I can't get my head around that.
I'm not sure I know the answer to that, but I know we need lithium.
Okay.
And we need all of these minerals. And you also need, when you're talking about MTHFR, you also need vitamin B2 because that activates that enzyme. And you need B6, and you need zinc. And we need all these minerals in here. But low-dose lithium is, I've never seen a side effect of this, and some people makes a big difference.
Mm-hmm. So do you treat children?
I've treated quite a few autistic children. I've treated children.
My question is, you know, most of these kids that have a mutation, that I've seen anyway, by the time they get to a doctor that even has any idea what's going on besides wanting to give them Adderall or Vyvanse or whatever it is that they want to give them pharmaceutically, these kids have developed these symptoms of, you know, intolerances to food consistencies or fabric consistencies, and they get very, you know, willful and won't eat because of. How do you get these kids to eat and take supplements? Can't figure it out. How do you do it? If they're sick and they or if they're having these problems and they won't take the supplement, how do you get them to do it? If they have, you know, if they won't, like, for this with one child that I know will only eat ice cream, how do you get them to eat the supplement, a handful of supplements?
I don't feed them. But I tell you what. Well, you train the mothers. I mean, you have
okay,
to.
Okay, I'm one. How do you do it? I mean, I've tried everything. My son's like, I don't want the supplements. I don't want help. I want the pharmaceutical. I just want one pill. No matter what I do, and I've had every test you could possibly, and I've showed him he will not do it. So how do you get him well?
How old is this child?
He's 14.
Okay, well.
How do you get him before it's too late?
Well, the children that I've been dealing with are usually 2 and 3 years old, so the mothers at that point have more control. And they just are tough. And sometimes the mothers, you know, they just won't do it. They just won't do it. So, well, listen, if this child of yours had an infection and you didn't get that pill down that child's throat and he would die, would you get that pill down there? Well, yeah, sure. But they don't think of that sometimes in, when you're using a supplement. They don't think of supplements as being that important. So it's really about the mother, I think. I've treated children that were severely autistic. Couldn't even see them in the office. That child is completely out of spectrum now. And the difference wasn't so much me. It was the mother. I had another child. The mother was just, she was determined that child was going to get well. He was 3 years old, severely autistic. 18 months older, yeah. This child went up and talked to 2 legislators. They just chatted him right up. And the mother drove 130 miles so they could hear. But she had hired someone in the house to help her with the diet. She basically lost her house. She spent $60,000, not on me, but just with everything she could to get that child well. And that child was completely off spectrum in 18 months. And it's a shame because the resources are just not there, even for things like ABA training.
Yeah, I'm having to do it all by myself. Every single doctor that I've taken my child to, I'll take them all the tests, because Amy Yatsko, you probably know her, she's a friend of mine. So she and Patricia Kane, and they've ran a lot of tests for me, so I have all this information. And the pediatrician says, I don't know what this is, and I am not interested in learning. Let me write you a prescription for Vyvanse or Ritalin. And it's so frustrating. So perhaps if you could tell, just give a general idea for parents to look, what are some things they could do at home to help their child? Let's say they have somebody that has a ADHD. We won't even do a severe autistic child. Just what are some things they can do at home? Again, understanding that we're not trying to treat or diagnose.
Sure. Well, I think the first thing in these cases is trying to find a physician that will say, I don't know, but I will help you and go along with things if you find an expert or someone that can help you, as long as I feel it's reasonable and I'm not going to harm your child. That's a reasonable request, I think. And there are physicians that will do that. So the first step you may have to do is change physicians to get someone that's going to work with you. And I'm finding more and more acceptance of that in my local community because, well, there's more and more talks on this, so people are becoming aware of it. Well, the first thing you got to do is clean up the diet. You know, our diets are just full of junk, and garbage in, you're not going to get great things out. So you've got to work on the diet. And that's hard on the teenager because they want to eat what they want to eat. So you've got to get some good stuff in them. And smoothies and juicing and things like that are a good way to do it. You can make those things so they taste good. So they'll get them in. And they start to feel better, then they'll get on the program. I know we had some, we were given this one child IVs. And when we first did it, the mother said, get the IV in him. We had to hold that child down. He was 8 years old or so. He was kicking and screaming. It was a nightmare.
Wow.
Two IVs later, that same child was talking, came in, held his arm out, and said, hi, Dr. Smith, and just held still because he felt so much better after that treatment. So, you know, there's little things you can do. You can usually get them to take vitamins and things like that, but especially if you can make it in a tolerable form. But try to get the toxic stuff out of their diet, the soda pops, the things like that.
Okay. All right. Can we talk a little bit about, you know, one of the alleles of this mutation also happens to be, you know, well, several of them have to do with cancer, both colon cancer and breast cancer. So can we talk a little, few minutes about hormones, about, you know, the liver and its conversion of hormones and it's holding on to toxin. Can we just talk about liver? I guess that's a better way to talk about it.
Okay. Well, you know, first of all, I like to sort of, when I have a 677-1298. So the 1298s tend to more have more mental issues. I would say that chronic anxiety being one of the most common, depression. So I sort of see it sort of in that more mental, more heart on the 677.
Mm-hmm.
The liver is really interesting because we can completely reverse cirrhosis. I mean, take a guy ready for a transplant and turn him around with nutrition, even if he still has active virus. That's how powerful nutrition is in the liver. So one of the things that I see is congested bile. And gallstones, really, you should think of them as liver stones because the reason that they're the bile sits in the gallbladder, but the reason you're having problems with it is because it's thick and it's full of garbage. So getting the bile then and looks like it was jets going over.
Sorry.
But the jet was going over. I don't think you'd be able to hear me.
Oh, sorry. Okay.
So I started him on the liver cleansing diet. It's a little book by Susan Cabot, MD.
I have it. I love it.
It's a lovely little diet, and it just gets the garbage out of there. And then I get their bile flowing, and I like their product called Beta TCP or Beta Food by Standard Process. Both of those are beetroot extract as the main ingredient, and they just get the bile flowing. I've had people come into the office. I thought they were going to have to go right to surgery. There was such severe pain, and we'd get an ultrasound on some of them, and they didn't even have any gallstones, but their pain would be gone in 48 hours when we got them on these products. And got them off the bad fats. Get off the hydrogenated fats. And the liver can respond pretty nicely.
So what some people with the CBS mutation can't do milk thistle. So if you know, because of the
sulfur.
I guess the sulfur. So what do they do? Maybe N-acetylcysteine or NAC or something like that? I mean,
well, those N-acetylcysteine will push glutathione formation. I think you can still thin the bile without, you know, you don't have to use Silymarin necessarily to on the liver. I mean, it's a great herb for the liver, but you don't have lipoic acid also works pretty well.
Mm-hmm. And what about, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Mainly get those, make sure those minerals are up, because those people with CBS tend to have mineral deficiencies.
Okay, and what about using beetroot, which I love it, I think it's great, but what about that problem and the meth being, you know, methyl donor and that kind of problem going on, you know, with the nitric oxide thing?
I don't quite understand what you're asking me.
You know, many of the people that have MTHFR mutations, they can't, if they have a lot of viruses inside, if they take, you know, the beetroot, it's great for their blood pressure and it's great for thinning bile, but it also feeds those viruses, and suddenly they have this huge flare-up in the viruses, particularly like in the lower back at the bottom of the spinal cord or in the gut. What is another way possibly that they could do use thin bile without having to use that product?
Well, I know what you're talking about.
Does that make any sense?
Yes, it makes sense. I've had this. I had herpes under my eyelid, and I realized it was because I was taking arginine, which
enriches
nitric oxide. And so after suffering for a few days, sometimes you can't see your things in yourself, you know. A friend of mine said, well, you need lysine. You change the arginine-lysine ratio, and that promotes DNA viruses like herpes. So you'll get a viral flare when you do that. So if you're one of those people, and I'm one of them, I just don't take arginine, so lipoic acid would probably work fine. Mainly just changing the diet, though. If your liver is bad, dietary change makes a big difference, and it works fairly quickly.
So
I put people on, they're in a gallbladder attack, I just put them on clear liquids.
I want two questions, and I'm going to let you talk about whatever you want to talk about. One, now that we're on nitric oxide, can you talk a little bit about what people need to be aware of when they go to the dentist? How important is tooth and gum care to particularly these mutations? And if you're going to go get them fixed, is it okay to do nitrous oxide?
Not in some people. Sometimes people, nitrous oxide is going to set them, they're going to have a problem with nitrous oxide. Well, gum disease is a huge risk factor for heart disease. It's also usually a sign that you have mitochondrial problems. The mitochondria are the little organisms that sit inside our cells that make energy. And the gums use a lot of energy. There's a rapid turnover. So things that help the gum disease are things like CoQ10, which help protect the mitochondria. And this is a big problem with statins. Statin drugs deplete CoQ10, and therefore you'll see the muscle pain in a lot of people right away when they start these drugs, which I think are horrible. I've lost my train of thought.
We were talking about gum disease and tooth disease generally.
One of the things you want to do is get the mitochondrial working better, and there are some nice supplements that do that. Carnitine, ribose, CoQ10, all of those things help promote more ATP, which is the energy formula that our body uses that's made by the mitochondria. So if you get the mitochondria healed up, then that's going to help the gum disease. And then I like to irrigate the gums with there's some oils that you can use. I put them in like a water pick and just irrigate those. And
which
then I
use
magnesium. Pardon?
Which oils do you use?
Oh, there's several products out there. I can't remember the name of that oil, but it's there's several periodontal products, and they all use the same oil, and it works extremely well. You can clean out all that infection. But you've got to get it down where you need it. So water picks have a little karyotype that goes in there.
Mm-hmm.
And you can actually watch the microbes. If you put them under a microscope, you can look at it before and after. There's a dramatic difference. And then you can use magnetic pulse if you have access to one of those.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll go in there and restore the circulation to the tooth. I've saved a couple of my teeth with that PEMF machine, which generates a magnetic pulse, goes through the tooth, and restores circulation.
So I'm going to ask one more question here, and then I'm going to let you talk whatever you want to talk about. What about SAMe? How
well,
SAMe
is
that to methylation?
Well, SAMe is one of the more advanced methylation products. So if you think of your methylation cycle as two cogs, like two gears, and the MTHFR and the L-methylfolate is the small driving gear, so that's turning the second cycle. Without the 5-L-methylfolate, the second gear sort of stops. And that's the processes that are methionine going to SAMe. And then those methylation products flow out of there, and you get glutathione. And so SAMe is a great supplement to use. It's a little bit more expensive, and I think you have to be a little bit more careful about where you get it, because there was, I think, a study done that a lot of SAMe was not active. Some supplements, it doesn't matter that much. CoQ10 is another one that they studied a whole bunch of different varieties of CoQ10 on the market, and most of them were inactive.
Interesting.
But SAMe can be huge. I remember one autistic kid I saw. He lived quite a ways away, so we gave him two things. We gave him a liquid spray form of SAMe, and we gave him PCA, which is a sort of a binding agent with chlorella, and to bind up his toxin. I didn't see him for 4 or 5 years. He just kept on taking it because he was getting better. And in 5 or 6 years, his autism was completely gone, just on those
really?
Two products.
Wow.
I was a bit flabbergasted, actually. But
that's really amazing. That's really amazing. Okay, so we got about 10 more minutes, 12 more minutes. Is there anything you would like to talk about? Tell us, I'd love to hear what you do about your C677. I think that's very interesting.
Well, I take a combination of methyl B12 and L-methylfolate. And more recently, I've also started taking Bioptrin. And Bioptrin is sort of an interesting topic because it's BH4, because it controls all your neurotransmitters, your melatonin, your norepinephrine, your serotonin, tryptophan, all are controlled by Bioptrin. And the 1298, MTR, MTR, those mutations tend to deplete this. And sometimes also the CBS depletion, if you've got a bunch of ammonia going on, that'll pull your Bioptrin down.
Mark, how do you spell that?
Bioptrin.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
And it's available as a supplement, but it's also, we've started compounding it here. It's, I understand it's used in fairly high doses for PKU, phenylketonuria. And so our compounding pharmacist has figured out, she's got the actual drug, which is exceedingly expensive, and made it into small amounts for compounding. And so people, for example, that have intrusive thoughts, this mental stuff going on, the Bioptrin can be very helpful. When we're giving methyl B12 and hydroxy B12, what we're doing in one respect is pushing the Bioptrin cycle. So we're trying to raise that Bioptrin, and that in turn helps balance and raise our neurotransmitters. So when I say the 1298, you see a lot of anxiety and a lot of depression. So we use a combination of L-methylfolate, fairly low dose, and methyl B12, and then we'll add Bioptrin. and we do them all sort of one by one, so we don't want to overload. And that's working really well. I had a patient also want to talk about, you said you just take the injectable. And I know a lot of people are on the sublingual methyl B12, but I've just found that the injectable works a lot better in some people. I had a lady last week. She had this chronic anxiety, chronic depression, and she was about 40, 38, 40. I asked her, when did this start? She said, it's been this way since I've been 7. And she was on L-methylfolate. She was on methyl B12 sublingual. I said, well, let's give it a try injectable just to see, because I've found a lot of times it works better. In 1 week, all of that was gone. 30 years of depression gone in 1 week by just switching from oral to injectable. I use a sub-Q.
Oh.
Subcutaneously.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you, your body will use it fairly quickly. If you inject it, you got red urine, it's right into your system and it doesn't stay there. So we put it under the skin, and it just is like a deposit, like putting food in your cupboard instead of on the table. Body just uses it. You can usually tell when that methyl B12 is gone. So then the test to determine whether you can go off of the shots and onto the sublingual without any problems is just take both. If you're taking the shots and you're taking the methyl B12 sublingually and there's no drop-off, then you can stop the shots. But if you're still getting the drop-off, even though you're on the oral, then you need to stay on the shots.
Well, my thing was, I didn't have a drop in the mood. What I did have happen was my muscles from my neck to my feet got very tight. Like if you watch, twisted a guitar string until it couldn't go anymore, it was like that. And with too much B12, and I know this will sound crazy, if I have too much B12, this is the only way I know how to describe it, the top side of my foot on the right-hand side gets neuropathy. If I don't have enough B12, and methylfolate plays in here somewhere, but I'm not exactly sure how it does, but mostly if I don't have enough B12, the arch of my foot gets neuropathy. So I can tell exactly when I need to give B12, and I can, if I take the sublingual, I get the neuropathy on the top of my foot. So with the injectable, I don't get anything. I just feel fabulous. So I don't know what that is. Evidently, I just can't use it at all or use it too fast or something. Do you have a comment to that?
Well, I think you're not absorbing the oral, and I find that to be the case with a lot of people. I know a lot of people use the methyl B12 orally, and they seem to get good results, but a lot of those people that I see have already been on that, and that's why I just put them on the shots and things get better. A couple of things that I see when people come in to me that they've been several places with knowledgeable people is the lymphadenopathy has not been, or the lymphedema, excuse me, has not been addressed. And
I've not done that. I'm going to try that.
And when you get that, then everything starts to work better. We've seen that especially with liver disease, with this autoimmune hepatitis.
Mm-hmm.
They've been told that, your next step is a liver transplant, and we tested their livers and using energy testing, and there was lymphedema. We cleared it up in a week, and they started to get better. Had a couple of cases of that with primary biliary cirrhosis and autoimmune hepatitis.
Do you phone consults for people? Because I know some people that'd probably be interested in that.
Yeah, we do phone consults. People just have to understand that they have to get any medication or anything like that from their current doctor. We just send them a report and some recommendations that they can discuss with their doctor.
Okay.
So
I had somebody call me 2 weeks ago about having hepatitis, but she thinks it's hopeless that nobody can help her. So I might
hepatitis is one of those. If it's hepatitis C, anyway. That there's some nutritional product out there that will just reverse that. We've just had a lady in the office. We started her on it. She's had the hepatitis for, since she was 16 or so, and she's just under about 60. So, a lot of fibrosis and damage. Okay. And our liver enzymes were in the 400 range. And she went and got the blood test, and the doctor was all alarmed because they were so high. But when we checked them, they were 40% drop from what they were just 2 months ago.
Oh, that's amazing.
And there's people that you can actually measure the fibrosis by using an ultrasound. And they have it, and the Canadian ultrasound goes vertical and doesn't have the cone pattern that ours does.
Mm-hmm.
So it's you can determine the bounce of the liver. So a fibrotic liver doesn't bounce. It's just stiff. And so over 4 or 5 years, you can see these people go from a stage 4, which is the worst, back up to just almost a stage 1 on this nutritional program.
Wow, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. So how do you do your glutathione? Do you mix NAC and C, or do you do oral, or do IV? How do you get glutathione?
Well, glutathione is one of my favorite things to use. I think there's a limited use of glutathione in IV. So if you've lived a life with this and you've been exposed to toxins and you haven't been careful, like, I used to ride my bike behind the spray truck. How stupid was that? Accumulating all these toxins, when you start fixing your methylation problem, you're still very toxic. So you have to get rid of that backlog of toxins before you're going to really feel well. And the extra glutathione you make, it goes into house cleaning. So it takes a while to build up enough glutathione just by correcting the methylation pathway to feel well. So that's where I think IVs come into hand, because you can give a person a huge amount of glutathione IV. We give 3,000 milligrams, and we just give it with saline. We don't mix it with other vitamins, because they may counteract each other. And people get pretty dramatic responses. Now, one of the things that we do is we give a binding agent with it. If you give someone really toxic 3,000 milligrams of glutathione, they're not going to be very happy, because they're going to dump toxins into their bile so quickly. Then that's going to get in the small bowel, and they'll have vomiting usually, or nausea, be quite severe. So what we do is put a binding agent, that can be charcoal or clay or even fruit pectin, in there to bind up those toxins that we release. And we start slowly, and we just build them up. And they can usually feel quite a bit better after we do this for a while. And then there reaches a point where they're generally getting better anyway, and we give them the glutathione, and they really can't tell the difference. Well, that's time to stop it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Do you ever use oral glutathione?
But there's the problem with oral glutathione is that you may be inhibiting your own body's ability to make it. This was a feedback cycle in all of these things. But I do use it in people that are pretty sick early on. I'll use it to get some in. If they're dropping off between their IVs, they can't come in for the IVs, or the IVs aren't lasting long and they live out of town, I'll use that. But most glutathione is not well absorbed, so that doesn't work. We've used topical, we've used inhaled, that works pretty decently. And we've even used rectal glutathione.
Wow. Okay, we've got about 2 or 3 minutes. Anything you want to talk about again? You want to talk about tell us where your website is again, and maybe how people can contact you?
Well, our website is nwimed.com, and we're just reworking it. So we've still got some bugs in it, but we've just changed our format on it. And we hope to have more information on there so they can get all the information they need.
Your name is Stephen, S-T-E-P-H-E-N, Smith.
Right.
Dr. Stephen Smith.
The English form. My mother would be pretty particular about that.
So anything else that you want? We got, 2 minutes.
Well, I think people want... One of the things that I like to measure on people is get a glutathione level, and you can get that from a lab called Vitamin D Diagnostics. And I don't think I've measured a normal one yet on someone that's chronically ill. So glutathione can be huge in getting people well. The other thing is I like to get a genetic profile on people because it makes things go so much faster if you know exactly where the problems are. And for each SNP that you have, which are the variation, there's usually a remedy you can try. And then just don't get too gung-ho in this. And don't blame your disease on MTHFR. Half the population has MTHFR of some sort or another. But it's what you eat, what you put in your mouth, your thoughts. All of these have a huge impact on your health. So it's not just MTHFR, because otherwise a lot of people would be sicker than they are. You can have MTHFR and be perfectly normal. But it's the habit and your environment and all those things put together with a weak methylation system. And then usually there's a stressor, something that overwhelms the person that puts them off.
Well, thank you, Dr. Smith, for taking time to come on. You've been wonderful, and I appreciate your time and your interest in informing my audience. It's been great to have you. And I hope you'll come back sometime.
Sure.
Thank you, and have a great evening.
Thank you.